When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Boom! Welcome to a very, very special day here in the Good Listening To Show Clearing. I'm Chris Grimes, a motivational comedian, mojo coach, and I am the curator of the Good Listening To Show. Today is exciting because Josh Wheeler is from BeBroadcast.co.uk, a broadcast PR expert specialising obviously in media relations. I was introduced to the lovely Josh Wheeler by Nina Webb, who is the queen of Brazen PR, the CEO. She's similarly, Oasis are in Cardiff tonight, but both Josh and Nina's entity, Brazen, are in Manchester. Mad for it. And Josh Wheeler has very excitingly agreed to experience a particular series strand called Legacy Life Reflections from Within, with a desire to see if we can sort of help and work together and blow some happy smoke reciprocally, which is very exciting. So Josh Wheeler, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. I wouldn't say Nina is the queen of Brazen. She's the queen of Manchester, I would say. So to be honest, anything that Nina's kind of says to me, it's already got my kind of gold stamp of approval on. So yeah, I think this should be fun.
And she's had a glow up right there, not just the Queen of Brazen, but the Queen of Manchester. That's fantastic. Lovely. So welcome to the show. We've just had a very nice exchange where you've got livid about two things, the potential speed of the Wi-Fi. And then what's the other thing, just to share with us, that you got absolutely, you went on a scale from naught to livid, not about us, but what made you livid else, Josh?
Can you tell I'm a little bit dramatic at times? I was livid because we were talking about holiday and I'd been away in Crete a couple of months back and it was rainy the first couple of days. So rather than, I was livid. I was really annoyed. And rather than keep being livid, I was like, I'm going to find somewhere that's just going to be hot. It's going to be sunny. It's going to be like that. There's no way it can be anything else. And so I'm going away on Monday to somewhere hot. So I was just saying, that's it. Most things that I do are driven just on the basis that I'm annoyed about something.
And I can love the picture of you in Crete shaking your fist, why I order at the sky, and it makes you absolutely livid, which is fantastic. When we first met a couple of months ago, what was so striking was how empathic you were with my sort of cut and thrust of Legacy Life Reflections, because you've done quite a bit within the hospice sector, one of the many, many award-winning projects you've been involved in since 2010. But just position, first of all, Be Broadcast. What's the story behind the story of that, and how long are you into that?
So Be Broadcast is coming up to its third birthday. We are a specialist broadcast PR agency. And what that means is we work with brands, individuals, organizations, charities. We work with people that have got something to say. And what we overlay in that is that we're keen on social purpose. We're keen on things that are going to bring good to the world. We move away and we keep a distinct focus away from things that aim to kind of drive division. Even unintentionally, we're just hyper aware of the role that we get to play, the really important position of taking stories and bringing them to media, and the power that we have. So we kind of avoid things that look at generational divides, where one generation is being kind of cut and one isn't. We try to look at the things that unite us and focus in on those aspects instead. And it's doable. It's completely doable. We don't need to be, you know, attacking Gen Z or millennials or whoever, because as far as I'm aware, everyone quite likes avocados. but, you know, from my memory, you know, when I was a young millennial, you know, we were being attacked for eating avocados. And at the time, I remember thinking, well, I can't even afford an avocado. So that kind of experience drives us in that direction. So we're really lucky. We work with some amazing organizations, amazing people that are kind of committed to doing the same things as us, getting great stories out there, helping brands and organizations grow and develop. And as you say, we've worked on some incredible things that have then gone on to win awards. And we're just really lucky. And it's born from working in the industry since 2010 and looking at it, having deep experience in areas and looking and thinking how we can do things differently, a little bit more human, I think, is what we bring to it.
You're so intrinsically collaborative. You use the word we there so often. So may I ask the size of Be Broadcast? How many of you are there in the sort of royal we that you're using?
So there are four of us full time. And then we have a team of freelancers that we bring in that are basically kind of with us for the charge. And we pick up and scale up and down where we need to. And the aim is that we keep growing in the direction of travel that we are. I'd say we've got big growth plans. We're not a organization that is ever going to scale and be huge. It's not my intention. I don't see the need or the point for that. We're growing in a way that is right for us. I don't want to say we're a family agency with all the connotations that come of that, but where I want it to go is to become a family of brands that feed into each other and provide a really important place within the market. And I think We're absolutely on that journey.
And happy third birthday. And there's the final thing to say about that. If you're livid, you can even smash an avocado. So come on.
Exactly.
You've got this. So let me get you on the open road of what we're going to be doing together. There's a bit of a hybrid I've already described. We're doing a founder story to talk about all things Be Broadcast. But also, you've given me permission to take you extra deep into Legacy Life Reflections. So just to explain that, this is the show in which, as a sort of helicopter overview, I invite movers, makers, shakers, mavericks, influencers, and also personal heroes into a clearing or serious happy place of my guests' choosing as they share with us their stories of distinction and genius. Within that storyscape, Brandstrand Founder Stories is one way of taking a helicopter landing into the clearing. But this is Legacy Life Reflections. Without any morbid intention, this is to use the construct that Josh and I are about to go through to record either your story or the story of somebody really precious to you for posterity, lest we forget, before it's too late. And I'll explain at the end, my own father was a very willing willing guinea pig 5 years ago. My dad very sadly died last August, but he knew what I was up to, and he's become a bit of a happy mascot for the idea that we all know when we've lost that precious, special someone, what we miss the most is what they sounded like, the sound of their voice. So thank you for agreeing to let me take you through this sort of hybrid approach, Josh.
I think it's incredible. I think that you mentioned I've done things in hospices and the care setting, but I've also done an awful lot in terms of later life planning and death from a PR point of view. And I remember when I first started, And I got brought onto the account and I was like, oh God, how am I going to get radio, which has a, you know, skews slightly older demographic in some senses. How am I going to get them to talk about thinking about death? And actually, the nervousness was completely wrong, because it's the way, it's like with everything, it's the way you bring people into it. And actually, it's telling stories and getting people to open up. And this is the perfect thing. And the story about your father, you can then listen back to it forever. And that's beautiful.
I love that. The fact that the ultimate challenge is the Grim Reaper, death needs a PR job. And you've stepped in and you've done that.
That's one of the awards.
Wonderful. We've actually made the Grim Reaper look good, which is fantastic. So as I say, there is no morbid intention, because it's also, I've been told, like having a day spa for your brain. So it's my absolute pleasure, Josh Wheeler, to invite you to have your own curated day spa for your brain. So should we get going then?
Let's do it.
So there's going to be a clearing a tree, a lovely juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1. There's going to be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a golden baton and a cake. So it's all to play for. So first of all, Josh Wheeler, Be Broadcast PR expert, where is, what is, and interestingly, just before we went on air, you said, this is what I struggled with the most. But where would you say your clearing or serious happy place was? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational, and able to think?
I really struggled with this one, because I was thinking about the way that my mind works. And in many ways, it works in a really effective way. My mind, I feel, works at a million miles per hour consistently. Oh, thank you, Rachel. I feel that my kind of like place where I can step out and kind of disconnect is the beach. And I don't just mean the beach on holiday. I also mean here in the UK. So I've got two dogs. I love being able to take them and like paddle in the sea. But it's the only place that I'm able to just zoom out of everything. And it just, I think there's something really about the water connection. There's something else about water a bit later on that just really brings me out of my head, which I thought, how naff to say like, oh, the beach. But it kind of is.
Just to blow some extra happy smoke at you, that was not naff at all. That has the whole seascape of PR as a huge vista stepping out before you, and lots of voyages of discovery. That made complete sense. So would you like to pin that brilliant app, What Three Words? Would you like to pin yourself to a particular beach, or are we just talking about generically the beach?
I would maybe go Crosby Beach. It's the one that we go to the most. And yeah, good memories there, like good fun. So I would go there.
Lovely. And you said we again, we're not just talking about the two dogs there. Who else are we going with?
My partner as well. Yeah, my partner.
Lovely. So for those of us who aren't sort of totally, it's up north is Crosby Beach, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'm based in Manchester. It's about an hour away from us. And it's the one with, you've probably seen it, like the statues.
Yes.
And that's the one. Yeah. Do you know what? It's a lovely beach. Is it the most beautiful beach? Probably not.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. It's where I've taken the dogs and they've gone paddling and they're like Axel's first experience of the water. And yeah, that for me is the place.
And I'm thinking Gormley. Is that right? Is that the artist who's put the statues there? Is it John Gormley? Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there we are in Crosby. If I got that right, Crosby Beach. Or Crosby.
Crosby.
As in Bing. Lovely.
Yeah.
Bing, bang, bosh. Off we go.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Brilliant. So now I arrive with a tree in your clearing, which, because of my hecting background, is deliberately a bit Waiting for Godot-esque, a bit existential. I'm going to shake a tree now to see which storytelling apples fall out. How'd you like these apples? And you've been kind enough, Josh, to have thought about four things that have shaped you. three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention and borrowed from the film Up, where the dog goes, oh, squirrels. What are your monsters of distraction, sometimes called your shiny object syndrome? We'll get onto that. What never fails to distract you? And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. So over to you, Josh. It's not a memory test. I'll curate you through it. So four things that have shaped you.
So I think the first thing that I would say has shaped me is growing up in a tiny little village in the West Midlands, where ultimately, as an example, there was one bus into the nearest town that took 45 minutes to get there once every 2 hours. So really disconnected, small, you know, could have kind of gone in a completely different direction. So I think one of the things that I just knew is that I wanted to see more. I wanted to experience more in the world. That has definitely shaped me. Not knocking the place at all. It's just one of those things that put me on a bit of a trajectory early on.
Just before you move away from that, do you mind just naming the place? We're not shaming it. We're just saying that it put you into a cul-de-sac you knew you needed to escape, which I completely understand.
Exactly. No, escape's not even the right word, but it kind of is. It's more just a case of I knew I wasn't going to stay there forever.
Yeah.
And that was it. It was so it's a little village called Kyneton in between Stratford and Leamington in the West Midlands. Royal Leamington Spa, officially. Lovely place, but just it was almost like I was inside an egg that you needed to kind of to be bigger. From then on, I went straight from there to London, and that's quite a shock to the senses. The kind of the next bit that I think shaped me is the people that I met when I was there. So I'd kind of perhaps come in as a bit sort of rough and ready experiencing the world. So, you know, pals at uni that, you know, you go to uni, you meet lots of different people with lots of different experiences, bringing you, kind of guiding you, but also people that I met in the world of work. So like one chap that weirdly I connected up again this week with Andy, who taught me, it's funny, I spoke to him about this recently. He taught me the notion of kind of just being cool and calm in situations. I always looked at him, you know, I would be flapping about things. He was my account director at the time. I would be flapping about things, and he would always be, you know, just the air of cool. And I'm so jealous of that. I am jealous of that. And actually it taught me that really is the ability, looking at things and kind of seeing them for what they are and being able to do things. You can do things, but you don't need to get to 100 miles per hour. That, I think, had a real impact on me and changed the way that I've gone off. So I'm more of that kind of swan mentality, I think, where I try to provide, you know, everything's fine, it will be fine, this is what we're going to do, but underneath there's
the majestic swan. And what's Andy's second name, just to sort of give him the mention?
Andy Crisp.
Nice. Yeah. Very good.
The third thing is the jobs that I had early on. Funnily enough, I don't look towards university or even kind of early PR-y jobs as necessarily that shaping. I look at more in terms of the focal points of what I did that helped me to see the broader world. So for instance, I worked, we talked about it, I worked at a care home when I was 11, 12, I think, and I was a tea boy. I used to finish school and I would go to the care home and I would make tea, and I used to get £50 a month. And I thought I was rich. £50 a month making tea for an hour. I'd go round, serve, and then collect up and wash up the cups. And actually what I was rich in was the skill set of being able to talk to people. Lots of people who were nonverbal, lots of people who were poorly and unable to kind of communicate, and then lots of people that just really wanted to communicate and wanted to share stories and get to know people. We also dealing with people with things like Alzheimer's and incredibly awful situation, but just being able to realize that people are not that different. There's not a lot that divides us in lots of ways. And then from that, when I got a little bit older, I went and became a till boy at Tesco and loved Tesco. It's my favorite brand of all time. And I still shop there. But I worked there on Saturdays and Sundays. And it, again, it reinforced this notion that actually you don't need to be afraid of talking to this person or that person. You know, that person could be a millionaire, that person could be, you know, whatever. It could be anybody, but ultimately we were all pretty much buying the same fruit and veg, same products. You know, if there was a promotion on, most people bought that thing. And so I got to see really quickly how actually we are pretty much alike. And I think that's those sorts of learnings have taken us to where Be Broadcast is today. Like it's how can we unite people over the things that we've got in common, yes, and tell those stories, as opposed to finding the things that we don't have in common and picking, you know, picking apart. And that's why I think we work.
Wonderful answer. I love that. Yes.
And I think the final thing that has shaped me is somewhere in the middle. And it's the realization that probably came a bit too late in my career, but it probably came that being busy doesn't necessarily mean being fulfilled. So there were periods of my career where I felt a need to just be on a wheel and I needed to do everything at 1,000 miles per hour. And my brain totally allowed that. And probably before it had a term, was kind of getting close towards burnout. So that focus on, you know, I can take that on, I can do this, I can do that, and I'm going to pull all these things together, and then letting that hit you is quite rough. So that bit, that realization is the probably the final kind of chapter of things that have shaped me, getting that cemented. It's not perfect, but getting much, much better at balancing all of that.
And self-awareness being the holy grail in your timeline to the point when you realised, well, because you are wired to go fast, that's a very deep skill and ability and capability. You talked about Andy giving you more of a Zen approach, if you like, to being calmer. But on your journey, how long ago was the encroachment towards burnout?
Well, there's been a couple of times. There's been a couple of points where I think I had the realisation probably about 5 or 6 years ago. And I probably put it into action just before I started Be Broadcast, where so during the pandemic, working in broadcast was really rough, not because of the like a downturn, but actually the opposite. It was an upturn, uptick even, in the sense that we were all at home. So people were, you know, in brand mind, people were watching TV, listening to the radio more. And they were. We saw the results of that. And so actually the work probably tripled.
Wow.
But the work also went from being, you know, telling stories about how to unite us to informing people how they can have a funeral, how they can say goodbye to their loved one without having a funeral. And that, I think that takes its toll, and it certainly did on me. And when we started to come out of lockdown, the whole process, I mean, I sort of looked and reflected and thought, I just want to do something. I want to do something different. I want to have a little bit of a more meaning in what we do.
Yes. And also, just in researching you before today, I was very struck with your most recent LinkedIn post, which is about reminding us in this sort of wave and a torrent of AI coming at us like a sort of tidal wave, to remember to still remain human and connecting. I noticed how you were referencing, you know, historical imperatives of the Luddites when the looms arrived and, you know, the robotic burger flippers of the land. And we always assume doom and gloom, but actually we always need people and we always need relationships.
We always do. We always do. And we always need to tell stories, which is why I quite like this. We need to tell stories. And I think, because I was thinking about this and I love history. I find it fascinating. And when I look at those things, the kind of the perception is that this happened and then this happened, when actually the reality is not always as clear cut. And I think that AI is just another one of those moments. It's going to change everything. It is changing everything. But we just have to remember our place in all of that. And I think it's so easy to jump straight to, you know, job cuts, jump straight to this because this is going to solve all of these problems. When in reality, you know, it's going to speed things up. It's going to do X, Y, and Z. But I imagine that fairly soon we will start to see organizations realize that actually it's not going to do everything for you. I'm just waiting for it to be able to make me a coffee. And then I'm solved. Like, that's sort of thing.
I love that. Wonderful. So that's great shapeage.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So now in the tree curation shaking structure, we're on to three things that inspire you now, Josh.
Yes. So the things that inspire me are, and kind of really get me motivated, are people who want to make a difference. People that are doing what might be seen as small fry. And it's funny, we do quite a lot of stories and activity where people are fundraising for a specific cause, and it absolutely flies in broadcast, and it makes sense kind of where my mind is at and where that subset of media look at. So I'm always inspired by scrappy, imperfect people that aren't, you know, fully trained in doing everything in the, you know, to the T. I find those people that are just pushing in their way the most inspiring of all. I think of things that we've done over the years. I remember doing an interview with a case study for a story, and this amazing girl who, I think she was 20 at the time. And now I think back, I'm much older than that, but I was probably about the same age, to be honest. I was doing this interview and it was all about financial abuse within relationships. And at the time, there was no law against that. As in, if we were in a relationship and I were to commandeer all of your bank cards and everything, there was nothing that really, you know, looked at it. And it always went hand in hand with domestic abuse. And I was interviewing her, but really my job is to listen and tick off and make sure the person's delivered the messaging for the campaign. And she was talking to me and she was explaining the abuse that she'd gone through. And I realized in that moment that for her, this wasn't a campaign. This was her life.
Yes.
And I was up to that point treating it as a campaign. And those people really inspire me. So people that are just pushing in their way to make whatever it is that they're doing better, I think they're the gold tickets in life. The other bit is when people feel seen or heard. I hope that it's something that I do. You can never say for certain that you're doing everything in the right way. But I think back to moments in my career where people have taken time to not necessarily explain something, but just taken time to just guide you through. I think back to the first pitch that I ever did. And I was drafted in, I think, at the 11th hour for some reason. And I was terrified. If I remember rightly, it was a repitch as well, which is never a great place.
We'll try again.
And I was really nervous. And I remember one of the really senior people at this big corporate agency that I worked at, she grabbed me. She was like, hey, have you got 20 minutes? And it turned into like an hour where she just walked me through the pitch in her own time. And I still remember that moment as just being, it was about kindness. It wasn't about whether or not we won that pitch. I don't think she thought we were going to. And I think it was just about kindness of, I'm going to make sure that he's actually okay in this. And so those moments where you can just take an extra step and an extra beat, I always think of when I hear people saying like, I'm too busy for this. I just think, oh.
Are you? Yes.
That's the one thing that I just hope I never say, and I doubt I get it right, but yeah, when someone spends that time, I think those people again are inspiring. They're the ones.
So human connecting with a currency of kindness is the through line there, and the thread, and about collaboration, because what I get from you, by the bucket load is the intrinsic desire to want to collaborate.
I think it's the best way. I think where you can really bring in strengths together and put people together and drive something forward, I think that is the best way. It's not always the most commercial way, but the world is changing. The world is evolving, and that bit is going to become more and more important. The other bit I find inspiring is probably all sound a bit of a cop-out, but the other bit I find inspiring is conversation. And specifically, conversations that are equal part sharp and equal part stupid. So I try to, I feel that I am not a corporate, I don't give off an air of corporate, although we work with some corporates and I'm au fait and comfortable briefing a CEO in terms of what they need to do versus, you know, say a charity that's on the ground doing something in a grassroots perspective. I love and I'm inspired by deep conversations with people that are working in things, doing something, and you get to hear the hard reality, because my brain is then thinking, well, that what you've just said there has made me think of seven things that we don't, as a society, we don't know about when it comes to this industry or this sector. And there have been so many amazing pieces of work that we've done from that have kind of just been inspired by a conversation, not necessarily with a marketing person or a PR person, but someone who's on the front line of things. And I think that's important. You know, it's certainly in our space, having deep experience of doing things, like, you know, if we ever got the chance to work with Tesco, if you're listening, you know, people, I would make sure that people kind of have that deep experience of working on the tills, stacking shelves, knowing what that is like, having customers come and talk to you and their frustrations and their stuff like that. That to me is magic. That's the stuff that we really need to get back to thinking about, you know, where is the interaction that where we can really learn stuff from, where people feel comfortable to kind of just chew the cud, moan a bit, you know, and give a bit of reality to what is often printed out on a piece of paper and you have to kind of work from. I think we need to get back to that importance of putting people front and center again. I
love the fact this has turned into a very beautiful, and I hope it works for you, pitch for the Tesco account, because you used to do it. You were bipping away, beep beep beep, you were there, the tea boy, that then became the tiller, the till man. Wonderful. From boy to man.
Not to brag, I have two Tesco customer services awards. One says for being smiley, which I don't remember being smiley at the time. We started off being furious.
Somebody would mash your avocados for you if you got furious. That's fantastic. So wonderful stuff. So I think that's the three inspires. Now we're on to the, oh, squirrels. What are your monsters of distraction? What never fails to stop you in your tracks, irrespective of anything else? It could be what makes you furious, but I don't know. So what are your two squirrels, would you say, Josh?
So my two things. The first one, unfortunately, is politics. So pre-Brexit, I was definitely one of those people that just did not pay attention. Really, you know, it didn't impact my life. I didn't think about it. Post-Brexit, and kind of immediately post-Brexit, I was definitely one of those people that became really engaged, more furious than anything at just the general state of things. Because I think I'm not going to get political. Don't worry about any particular party or theme or anything like that. But just the general view and the general position. I watch things like Prime Minister's Questions and I despair at just the state that we're in. There would be no boardroom where anyone would be able to behave like that. And I understand there's history and there's things, but I think what's really interesting is when I watch this, I think about young people who are less and less engaged with, you know, traditions that we have and that are really important, like Prime Minister's Questions, and who are active on social media and just looking in different places. And I don't think we've cottoned on to that yet from a political perspective. Similarly, you look at you know, the processes we have around things like the state opening of Parliament. When you look at that, and you, there's so much in terms of tradition, but how much does that mean to, you know, a person who's voting for the first time? I don't even think they know that that's happening. And yet so much money, time, attention, focus, security, everything goes into it. And so I think the way that organizations and the way that we work is making sure that what we're doing is hitting an audience. And we spend so much time, you know, obsessing over that, to then look at politics and people not voting in, say, local elections and stuff like that. It just infuriates me that we're in this kind of status.
Yes. And it's the birth of your sort of social responsibility, which is part of the cut and thrust of Be Broadcast as well now. It's got to be truthful, meaningful, kind, with a social responsibility.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the very, very baseline of it. You know, we are, as every organization is, we're apolitical. I have my own views, but we are apolitical. And actually, we have to help organizations tap into the challenges that we're facing. But I think in many ways, sometimes it's almost better to be on the, you know, on the ground yourself than actually engaging at the top level. Yes. Which is so bad to say, you know, that position. But there's a lot of great work being done at brand level that doesn't always get the support that it deserves, that is helping people. And yes. And that, I think, is vital.
And what's very relatable is the great travesty of politics is how binary, black, white, right, wrong it's all become. And of course, what's really rich is the humanity that resides in the middle. These are real people's lives, feelings, consequences.
Absolutely.
So that's a great squirrel to be totally attuned to the idea of social responsibility within politics. That's a great squirrel. No one's ever answered that in my circa 250 episodes in that way. That's lovely. Thank you. Second squirrel. What are your dog's names? Because sometimes dogs...
Dolly. So they're Dolly and Axel.
Love that.
So I've got a lovely story about this. So we had Dolly and Oscar, and we lost Oscar a couple of years ago. But we joked that Dolly Parton never had an Oscar. She never got an Oscar, so he was her Oscar. And then we did it differently this year with Axel. We came down to a shortlist. We got down to two names in the end, and we put them both on a piece of paper, and we put treats on them, and we let Dolly pick. She went to one, and then she went to the other one, and then she picked the other one, and that was Axel.
So lovely.
That's how they came back.
And the question on everyone's lips, what was the name on the other bit of paper with the treat on it?
The other one was Tommy.
Tommy. I love that. So Axel and Dolly, how lovely. So Dolly presumably just adores the new Axel. So that's lovely, even though she didn't get an Oscar. And I'm sorry you lost Oscar. Are they the same breed?
They are. So she is, she's 13, and he is just coming up to 2 now.
Wow.
And they just play all day. And he's really brought her out of, you know, when you get a little bit older, he's really brought her out of that. She plays with all of her toys. It's so sweet. And then she's very motherly towards him as well.
There's a lovely resonance in the idea of just give somebody a damn good listening to, which is partly what I'm up to. But the idea that, you know, Axel's arrived and is giving Dolly a really good listening to. And then look, Dolly's got an extraordinary life of 13 years, and you need to just tune into this experience and get her to play more.
It's absolutely true, because we say as well, the speed of which he picked things up. So toilet training. I mean, he was very sweet. He was like, he tries very hard with things, but he picked it up really quick because he was following, he was watching and paying attention. And when we give them things that he hasn't had before, he always looks to her first. So there is, you know, there is that passing of information. Yes. It's true. And we don't do it enough.
I'm really struck again with reminding myself of you being the tea boy back in the day, as the very popular person that did the circuit, able to connect with everyone as you went round by watching, observing, which I know will really inform all of your sort of brand expertise, because you've just found a way to connect with so many people. You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how Care of the Series strands at the goodlisteningtoshow.com website. And one of these series strands is called Legacy Life Reflections. If you've been thinking about how to go about recording your life story or the life story of somebody close to you for posterity, but in a really interesting, effortless and creative way, then maybe the Good Listening To Show can help. Using the unique structure of the show, I'll be your host as together we take a trip down memory lane to record the 5-4-3-2-1 of either your or their life story. And then you can decide whether you go public or private with your episode. Get in touch if you'd like to find out more. Tune in next week for more stories from The Clearing. And don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.